Reset. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this week, the debate over outdated mascots and logos came close to home as the Chicago Blackhawks put out a statement defending their name and announcing they intend to keep both the name and the logo. This comes as more and more sports franchises have their own reckoning with past racial injustices. Both the football team in Washington and the baseball team in Cleveland are exploring name changes. But not here in Chicago. The Blackhawks say it honors the past and pays tribute to the Native American hero. Dave Zirin is one of the leading voices when it comes to sports and equality. He's a sports editor at The Nation and the host of the Edge of Sports podcast. He's got an upcoming book called The Kaepernick Effect, and he joins us now. Always a pleasure to talk with Dave Zirin. Dave, welcome back to Reset.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the Blackhawks, this is something in Chicago that kind of came close to home. You know, when you talk about the reckoning that's happening with some of the sports, whether it be professional or college, it seems like the Blackhawks are doubling down. They're saying this is not offensive. This is an honor. This is a tribute to the Blackhawk Nation. What's your thought on that? Because they seem to double down, and their fans were like, great, you push back on cancel culture.
Of course, of course. And I live in the Washington, D.C. area where hopefully we are reaching a final reckoning with the team name of the football team, which is a dictionary-defined racial slur. And it's easy to be against that name. It's easy to be against, as we locally call it, the R word. Because it is defined in the dictionary as a slur, because the name itself has its roots in actual physical genocide. But what I think people need to realize who back names like Blackhawks and Chiefs and whatever, Atlanta Braves, Cleveland Indians, what people have to realize is that the studies are in on this. The science is known on this, and it has two effects, Native American mascotting, no matter how benign people think it might be. The first effect, according to the American Psychiatric Association, is that it harms kids, Native kids. It harms kids in Indian country. It harms how they view themselves relative to the rest of the world and what they think their ceiling is in terms of what they can accomplish in the world. That's one thing that we know. You know, you're good enough to be a mascot and that's it.
Right.
The second thing that we know from, again, this is about science and sociology and studies that have been done, is that when non-Native people absorb the idea of Native mascotry, one of the things that it does is that it makes it easier to ignore the actual real problems facing Indian country, whether you're talking about things like the incarceration rates, rates of police brutality, infant mortality, nutrition, food deserts. I mean, the list is very long in terms of the problems on the res, on the various reses in the United States. And mascotry, it allows us to turn a blind eye.
Dave, when you were talking about the Blackhawks and they come out with a statement and they say, you know what? No, we're not going to do it. We're pushing back. There always says it's not a cut and dry issue because it's not a racial slur. It's honoring. What can you do? I mean, is it just pocketbook stuff as you're seeing in Washington? Is it something bigger where there has to be a reckoning and a protest to it? I mean, will people walk away from the Blackhawks if they feel that it's insensitive? Or
no.
Does there have to be some sort of reckoning like we're seeing today?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people have been working, again, I speak from my D.C. perspective. People have been working to change the name here in D.C. for over 50 years. I mean, it dates back to the founding of AIM, the American Indian Movement, in the late 1960s. There have been massive protests against the name here for years. There have been boycott campaigns for years. But what it took was this last year, or I should say the last several months of this 50-state national uprising against racism and the Black Lives Matter movement that forced this reckoning to the table, precisely because so many corporations don't want to be on the wrong side of history. And they know that they're appealing to a young generation that is not only less white, but is also more left-wing. You could call it less tolerant of intolerance than older generations. And so that's what's triggered this hellaciously fast change here in Washington. And I'll say this as well. Like, I don't think it's a done deal that the name's going to change in Washington, despite numerous reports that say otherwise. This is one of those moments where any semblance of a backlash against changing the name could give Dan Snyder, the owner of this team, the confidence to just push ahead belligerently and say, this name is what we're going to go with. And that's why I was so dismayed as a Washingtonian to see the pushback from Blackhawk Nation, from the Chicago Blackhawks organization. Because any time you see something like that, all it's going to do is make Dan Snyder, who really is one of the worst people in the sports world, it's going to make people like that feel that much more confident. You know, when Trump puts out a tweet saying Native American mascots are awesome and we should revere them, I mean, that's the sort of thing that, I mean, makes the worst racists in the sports world that much more confident that they can push ahead and win this fight.
The other issue, too, with the Chicago Blackhawks specifically is that they play hockey. I mean, it's the National Hockey League. Their audience is primarily and majority white. And it always has been. And there's been some changes in demographics when it comes to gender in the last couple of years. But it has been just a white dude sport. And it is I don't want to say alarming, but it is a little bit of head scratching to watch how Blackhawks fans almost, you know, cheer and rejoice in the decision by the Blackhawks to double down on this mascot.
Yeah, and you know, I've done talks in Chicago in the past where I talk about the Blackhawks mascot and make the case for it to change. And for people who are, you know, open-minded about it and are willing to like sit through an argument about like, does this educate or miseducate about Native American history? Does this honor or dishonor Native American history? Is this just the equivalent of us naming missiles Tomahawk missiles and military missions like Operation Geronimo and things of that nature because we think it somehow honors people that we defeated? But actually all that really does is it honors the conquestors. It honors the people who are able to win those battles and then say, wow, you were so tough to defeat. I shall now name my military hardware after you. It's very similar in the sports mentality. People think it's honoring a name, but it's actually dishonoring the name. But my experience in Chicago is that when people are willing to listen and actually take a second to step outside of their fandom, they see it much more as an issue of right versus wrong. But when people are completely blinded by fandom or choose to look at it through the prism of cancel culture and political correctness, instead of the prism of racism versus anti-racism, then it becomes a much more difficult argument.
Yeah. Dave Zirin's with us, sports editor at The Nation. His podcast, Edge of Sports, must listen podcast. And he's got a new book coming out called The Kaepernick Effect. And that's a good transition to talk about, you know, obviously sports trying to get back online. But we had a conversation right before the 4th of July just about patriotism and a little bit how it kind of co-opted by professional sports, this idea that the military flyovers and the big flag on the field, that this wasn't always the case. But now it seems like you can't separate professional sports with militarism. So what do you say about that, this idea that there's this combination of those two things that didn't always go together?
Yeah, I mean, you just knocked it right on the head there. I mean, there's nothing inherent in sports that says it has to be this vessel of patriotism. Nothing whatsoever. It's been a social construct through time, whether it was rising for the national anthem during World War II and then keeping up that tradition during the Cold War, basically saying we are now in a state of permanent war, therefore we will continue to play the national anthem before games and have you rise for it. When we don't do that, you know, for movies, we don't do that for Broadway musicals. It's something very particular to sports, precisely because sports is so effective a transmission belt of patriotism, nationalism, and militarism. And you've seen that also then step up dramatically, of course, in this post-9/11 world in which we live. And I think one of the things that this movement over the last several months has done, it's very interesting, has been forced, it's really been forced upon it, and really it starts with Kaepernick taking a knee during the anthem, is it's forcing us to examine whether or not we think that a national anthem has a place in the sports world. Even though the protests are, of course, are about police violence, had nothing to do with the anthem, the flag, the military, or all the things, I think inherently these protests have forced people to confront this idea of whether or not, you know, standing in praise of a flag that oftentimes does not reach the lofty goals with which it expresses is something that I think has shocked the sports world to its absolute core.
Well, you know, with Kaepernick, this has been the most recent example, but you've seen so athletes really take the lead on the social and racial issues of our time. And this goes back and back. It goes to Muhammad Ali. And I want to play the famous clip when he's talking about Vietnam, which, you know, warning to people, there's sensitive language in here. But the idea being that Muhammad Ali, in the famed quote, you know, was one of at the forefront of modern history when it comes to athletes and, you know, the idea of what we're talking, racial justice.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big, powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. What, I'm going to shoot them for what? How can I go shoot them? Them little poor little black people, little babies and children and women. How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail.
Yeah, and then I want to play Kaepernick as well, which is the other clip, too, when he really talks about why he kneels.
I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand. I'm seeing things happen to people that don't have a voice, people that don't have a platform to talk and have their voices heard and affect change. So I'm in a position where I can do that, and I'm going to do that for people that can't.
Dave, the reason I play those back-to-back is that they're similar in their construct, but they're years and years apart. And at the end of the day, when people say athletes should sit down and shut up, they've been doing this for years. This has been a part. This has been more patriotic than sports itself.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the connective tissue between both is that you see how athletes are kind of like the canary in the coal mine when it comes to race, war, nationalism, and what it means to be an American, precisely because professional athletics depends upon poor and working class black athletes. And then they're given this incredible microphone with which to express how they feel. So it's not that these opinions are so, like Muhammad Ali's opinions were that different from what was being said on the streets of Louisville, or that Colin Kaepernick's opinions are that different from what was being said that whole summer of 2016 during the Black Lives Matter movement. The difference is two things. One, the power of their megaphone, and two, the fact that by speaking as athletes, they're able to speak directly to white people in a way that in our segregated society, far too often those voices are segregated.
And Dave, that's a great point, because at the end of the day, I wonder if you're going to see more of that, because they're on the right side of history, both Ali and Kaepernick. As we see a reckoning in 2020, it looks back and it shines a light on how positive their points were when nobody was listening or nobody wanted to hear it, more importantly. So what are you going to see is, and when football gets back on the field, or basketball or baseball or hockey, any of the sports, you're going to see more social justice be part of social and racial justice about what we see on the screen?
I think we are, because, you know, Sean Doolittle, the pitcher for the Washington Nationals, he said it really well. He was talking more about COVID, but I think it applies to racism as well, where he says sports are the reward for a functioning society. And I think that's an interesting way to look at it, because right now they're trying to push sports back into the mainstream, even though our society, because of COVID and because of racism and racial disharmony, is not functioning at the moment. Our society is non-functional at this moment that we're doing this interview. And so you're going to have athletes say, well, wait a minute, because our society's not functioning, then I'm not just going to shut up and dribble. I'm not just going to shut up and play. I'm not just going to toe the party line. I'm going to actually speak out about what is not functioning, because that's the reality in which I live in and my family lives in. And so because of that, I think we can expect to hear more from athletes, not less.
Yeah. Dave Zirin, sports editor at The Nation, host of Edge of Sports podcast, upcoming book called The Kaepernick Effect. Dave, always a pleasure to have you here on WBC. Thanks for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.